Welcome to The Drive. Over the next 2 hours, we'll break down everything that's happening in the sports world, locally and nationally. Got an opinion? Hit us up at 843-652-3776. The Drive is socially networked. Get us on Twitter at 1003TheTeam or on Facebook at facebook.com/1003TheTeam. Now buckle up, take the car out of park, and let's go to the Sports Radio 100.3 The Team studio in Murrells Inlet, South Carolina, with your boys, Pat Payone and Wally B.
Welcome to The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3 The Team, coming to you from Murrells Inlet, South Carolina, in our Sports Radio 100.3 The Team studio. No Wally B again today, but it is myself, Pat Payone, and Rusty behind the board, making sure everything goes well for us today. And we have a great show for you planned today, including two interviews with our NASCAR resident expert, Kerry Tharp, the president of Darlington Raceway. That's happening in the first hour. And in the second hour, Lane Harris, the play-by-play analyst for Coastal Carolina men's basketball, he'll be joining the broadcast to preview today's game inside the Sun Belt Conference, where the Shawnts look to get a win and move on to the second round. But starting off in the NBA, it almost took 19 seasons for Dallas Mavericks legend, and I'm not saying that easily, legend, he is definitely a legend, Dirk Nowitzki, to join the NBA's 30,000 point club. But he didn't have to wait long against the LA Lakers last night. He entered the game 20 points shy of this historic milestone and hit the 30,000 point plateau on a baseline jumper over Larry Nance Jr. with 10 minutes 58 seconds remaining in the second quarter. Talk about a pretty good first half for Dirk Nowitzki, the old man. But there are now 6 30,000 point scorers in NBA history, with Dirk Nowitzki joining Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Karl Malone, Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, and Wilt Chamberlain. Now, Malone, Bryant, and Nowitzki, he actually plans to play one more season, are the only players to score at least 30,000 points for one team, whereas Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Wilt Chamberlain and Karl Malone, or sorry, Wilt Chamberlain, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and Michael Jordan did it with multiple teams. Yeah. Do you really add in there the Washington Wizards for Michael Jordan? I mean, yeah, he threw some points down for him. Had a couple good nights. But, no. But more importantly, the Mavs are killing it right now. That is their 16th win in their past 25 games, and it pulls them within two spots of the Denver Nuggets for the final playoff spot in the Western Conference. Wasn't it just a month and a half ago we were talking about right off the Dallas Mavericks, they are one of the worst teams in the Western Conference?
Yes.
I mean, wow. Wow. 16 wins in the last 25 games, and that's what Dirk Nowitzki was really celebrating last night. But a huge accomplishment for Dirk. I threw out there the question on Twitter, is Dirk the best international player to ever play in the NBA? And it was a resounding yes for me. Easily, yes. Best international player to ever play in the NBA. Easily. That seems to be the case for Twitter right now as well, as 100% are saying yes as well. I can't even think some other good international players in NBA history. If you got some, let me know. If you think someone's better than Dirk, let me know. On Twitter at 1003TheTeam, or give us a phone call, 843-652-3776. Also in the ACC yesterday, the ACC tournament got underway, and as I gave my picks yesterday, I picked Clemson, Wake Forest, and Georgia Tech. I went 2 for 3. Georgia Tech is just a lame duck. I don't get it. But Clemson had a pretty good game. If they play like that against Duke, and not how they played against Duke the first time, Clemson has a good chance to beat Duke. Now, do I expect them to beat Duke? No. I don't expect them to beat Duke. But if Jerron Blossom game and Shelton Mitchell both play like they did yesterday, scoring 22 points, and again, it was against NC State, so it's not Duke, not the caliber of a Duke team. But if they play like they did yesterday in their first, in the first ACC tournament ever, or game ever played in the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, they have a chance. The number 12 seed Clemson Tigers have a chance against the fifth seeded Duke Blue Devils, and that's today. Do I expect that to happen? No, I don't expect that to happen. The second game was Wake Forest, and you know, we talked about it yesterday. Both Wake Forest was the closest team that was already in, stronger bubble team than Georgia Tech and Clemson. Clemson with this win, I think you know, it pushes them closer to the bubble. I still think they need to beat Duke to get in. But Wake Forest is now in. I know you know, they played a bad BC team, but you know, you still got a pretty impressive win, and they're gonna have to win again today to just shore up their place in the NCAA tournament. Georgia Tech is out now. When you lose to Pitt in the first round of the ACC tournament, you're done. Yeah, they only lost by two, but you're done. I'm sorry. You can't go into the tournament 16-17. All right, we got a phone call on the line. Who are we talking to? What's going on? Hello. Maybe we might have some complications there. All right, we got someone on the phone line.
Hey, can you hear me, Pat?
Yes, sir. I can hear you. Who's this?
Hey, this is Brian from Conway.
Brian, how's it going today?
Hey, good. Talking about your international players, yeah. I'd have to agree Dirk is the best. But a lot of people forget about Steve Nash because
he's just
north of the border. So I'd have to say he is a pretty close second, especially with him having some of a couple 90, 50, 40 seasons.
And a couple MVPs thrown in there as well.
Exactly.
Yeah, good point.
Just wanted to mention that.
Good point. I really appreciate the phone call, Brian. Yes, Steve Nash. I totally dropped the ball. And I don't. Maybe it's because he's from Canada. And that's hard for me to really understand, you know, or say that that's an international player. That's America's top hat.
Right.
Yeah. They just want to be Americans, right? No. Dirk Nowitzki, best international player. And yes, like Brian's got a good point. Steve Nash has got to be up there as well. Whew. Got a great show for you, planned today, but let's get through our birthdays and today's day in history as well. And starting off in 1922, Carl Furillo, the MLB right fielder who played for the Brooklyn Dodgers and the LA Dodgers when they moved. He was the National League batting champion in 1953 and won the World Series with the team in 1955 and in 1959. So he was born this day, March 8th, 1922. Also born this day, Jim Rice. In 1953, MLB left fielder who played for the Red Sox, 8-time MLB All-Star, who was also the American League MVP award winner in 1978. So happy birthday to Jim Rice. Also born this day, 1965, Kenny Smith, the Jet. NBA point guard who played for the Rockets, won back-to-back NBA titles with the Houston Rockets in the mid-90s, and is now more known for his role on that show with Shaquille O'Neal and Charles Barkley, the Inside the NBA or whatever it's called now. I don't even care. I don't watch that. But it's just bad television. Charles Barkley just says things because he's so dumb, and Shaq says things to get Charles riled up. And Kenny Smith is like the most level-headed person on that entire set, other than Ernie. And Kenny Smith actually talks about basketball, which is crazy to think about on a basketball show that they talk about basketball.
It sort of makes you feel bad for him.
Sometimes it does, yes. All right, and that brings me to my sports birthday profile. And today's profile is Hines Ward, a retired American football wide receiver, businessman, and television personality. Current NBC studio analyst who played 14 seasons with the Pittsburgh Steelers. He played college football at the University of Georgia. And the Pittsburgh Steelers selected him in the third round of the 1998 draft. Now, interestingly enough, he was regarded as one of the top five wide receivers in this draft coming out of the University of Georgia, along with Kevin Dyson and a little-known guy from Marshall University, Randy Moss. Going into it, he was projected to be at the end of the first round, maybe beginning of the second round. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Indianapolis Colts expressed major interest in him, and they visited with him multiple times, although they discovered that he had... He didn't have an ACL in one of his legs, so his value dropped drastically. And the Buccaneers chose Jacquez Green with a 32nd overall pick and Jerome Paython with the 34th overall pick instead of Hines Ward. What a mistake that was. But the Pittsburgh Steelers swooped in the third round, 92nd overall, and took Hines Ward in the 1998 draft. You know, he's also the Pittsburgh Steelers' all-time leader in receptions, receiving yardage, and touchdown receptions, although I believe Antonio Brown will definitely take away all of those titles right there for Hines Ward. But he was voted the MVP of Super Bowl 40. and upon retirement was one of 13 NFL players to have 1,000 or more career receptions. His best season came in 2002 when he finished with 1,329 receiving yards, 112 receptions, and 12 touchdown receptions, all career highs. Two-time Super Bowl champion, Super Bowl MVP of Super Bowl 40, and a five-time Pro Bowl member. And his career NFL statistics, he actually had 1,000 receptions and 12,083 receiving yards, 85 receiving touchdowns in his career. We got another phone call. Nick's on the line. All right, Nick, what's going on today? Nick, are you there?
You got me?
Yes, sir.
Hello?
I got you, Nick. Right. What's going on?
Oh, not a whole lot. I was just calling in on the international basketball player thing.
All right, who you got?
Do y'all guys consider Hakeem Olajuwon?
Yeah, he's got to be. Wow.
Okay, I mean, it's hard to put. Yeah, I mean, that's.
I'm going to start writing these down. You guys are bringing the heat today already.
Yeah, him and Dirk are pretty close, I would think. But, you know, Hakeem's two-time NBA champion, one of the greatest centers to ever play. You know.
Now that's a good one. That's a really good one. I like that one as well. I got to say, if I was doing the rankings between those, I don't know if I could separate them. I really don't know. I mean, Dirk Nowitzki has one NBA championship. He's been to the finals a couple different times, and he's got a, you know, he's been with, I don't know. That's a hard one. I think I might have to give it to the Dream, even though Dirk Nowitzki has more points in his career.
Yeah, and but Dirk, when he played, when he won his championship, he played out of his mind.
But, yeah.
you know, it's close.
All right, I really appreciate the phone call, Nick. That's another great one. Hakeem Olajuwon, thanks for the phone call. Enjoy your day. Wow, that's three right now. So Hakeem Olajuwon, Dirk Nowitzki, Steve Nash in our top three right now. Keep them coming in, 843-652-3776. Let's get to this day in history. On this day, March 8th, 1936, the first stock car race is held in Daytona, Florida. Now, in the 1920s, moonshine runners during the Prohibition era would often use their cars, their souped-up cars, to outrun the authorities. And to do so, they had to upgrade their vehicles, and they left them looking ordinary on the outside as to not attract attention, but the inside was all muscle and just pure speed. But eventually, runners started getting together with fellow runners and making runs together. They would challenge one another and eventually progressed into organized events in the early 1930s, happening with the first race in Daytona at the Daytona Motor Speedway in 1936. The main problem was that there was not a, there was a lack of unified set of rules among different tracks. And so Bill France, who was the creator and operator and president of NASCAR, saw this problem, held a meeting in the Streamline Hotel, and formed the first rules of NASCAR. Now, looking at the all-time Cup Series wins, Richard Petty heads the list with 200. David Pearson is second with 105 wins. That's a huge – that's 95 – wins right there. It's such a huge disparity right there. Jeff Gordon is in third with 86 career wins. And then looking at the guy who is still racing right now, Jimmy Johnson is in eighth with 58 career wins. Dale Earnhardt just ahead of him with 76. So Jimmy Johnson still has some room to make up. We'll see if he's ever able to pass Dale Sr. Also on this day, March 8th in 1951, I had to throw this one because I thought it was hilarious. The International Table Tennis Federation bans Egypt for refusing to play Israel. Not the fact that they were refusing to play Israel. I mean, that has political ramifications or whatever. It's just the fact that the International Table Tennis Federation has enough clout to ban a country from playing. And the ITTF, you've probably never heard that. That's the governing body of international table tennis. And they include the World Table Tennis Championships, which, you know, have continued since 1926.
Wow.
Now, the ITTF currently recognizes the Table Tennis Federation of Kosovo, and it's funny because this is unlike other organizations in more popular sports. The ITTF tends to recognize teams from generally unrecognized governing bodies for disputed territory. So Kosovo has a team, even though Kosovo is excluded from pretty much every other sport. It also recognizes the People's Republic of China, And that led to U.S. President Richard Nixon calling it ping-pong diplomacy in the early 1970s. Now, I looked up the rankings because I know you guys are all worried about who's ranked number one in the world right now. Well, I'm not going to pronounce these names. They are impossible to pronounce. But just to let you know, both in the men and the women, four of the top five players in the world are all from China.
That
shocker there.
Doesn't surprise me.
No, they're incredible. Finally, the last addition to this day in history, on this day, March 8th, 1971, Joe Frazier beat Muhammad Ali in 15 rounds and retains the heavyweight boxing title at Madison Square Garden. The storyline of this fight went much deeper than just two undefeated heavyweights clashing for the belt. Ali had refused induction to the U.S. Army and was considered a radical sheik and seemed to embody the culture of the 1960s in America. Frazier was cast as a champion, fighting for the establishment. There were so many celebrities ringside. Frank Sinatra was a ringside photographer for Life magazine. Barbara Streisand, Sammy Davis Jr., Hugh Hefner, Dustin Hoffman, Diana Ross were all ringside. Burt Lancaster was part of the closed circuit broadcast team. I mean, all that didn't even compare to what actually happened in the ring, and it lived up to the billing as the fight of the century. After 15 rounds of thrilling toe-to-toe action, Frazier won with unanimous decision. And just to give you a little bit of personal history, my grandfather, as I've mentioned to you guys multiple times, was a photographer for the New York Daily News. And I have a picture, not only of a picture he took with Frazier knocking out Ali, that's pretty awesome. But when Ali passed away and they did the entire Sports Illustrated, the entire magazine was about him. There's a picture in there, and it's from a different photographer of Joe Frazier knocking out Ali, and my grandfather's in the bottom left corner in the ring with his camera.
Oh, wow.
Taking the picture that I have. It's incredible.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's incredible. So grandfather gets to be a part of history. Pretty cool there, though. Oh, what a great day in history. Let's tell the folks what they're hearing on today's show, Rusty. All right. So we already talked about Dirk joining the 30,000 club. And is he the best international player of all time? And going back to the poll real quick, still 100% yes. But we've gotten some good phone calls. Hakeem Olajuwon thrown in there. Steve Nash. How about Patrick Ewing? He was born in the Bahamas. I didn't even think about that one. I'll write down Patrick Ewing as well. I don't know if he compares to Dirk and Hakeem, but he's up there. He's up there. We also went through the ACC first round results. Dennis. All right. And we went through the ACC first round results. Sorry, Rusty was talking in my ear. Let's just go to the phone lines before this. We got, you said Dennis on the line. Is that correct? All right, Dennis, what's going on, my man?
Hey, guys. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Just a quick thing about that Joe Frazier-Ali fight. You're right. It was the biggest thing in Madison Square Garden at the time. But if you look at that picture, now, I was a big Muhammad Ali fan. You're going to see when Frazier hit Ali with that left hook, he was also stepping on his foot, which contributed to Ali being knocked down. He didn't have his... He didn't have his balance. He couldn't get away from him. Check that out in that picture. I don't know if you knew that.
No, I mean, I haven't noticed that, but in all actuality, do you really think that led to him falling down? Probably not. Probably not. It was a punch that knocked him off his balance, and whether you want to think that he stepped on his toe or not, and that led to Ali going down. Hey, there's all these, you know, conspiracy theorists out there, but hey. That's what makes sports so great, is that we can argue and disagree to agree or agree to disagree.
That's right.
But we already talked about the ACC first round results with Clemson, Pitt, and Wake Forest moving on, and that gets underway again today. We will talk about NFL teams that need to win free agency, and I think that's a pretty important discussion to have. We will have our NASCAR Wednesday interview with Kerry Tharp. He'll be calling in to talk about what happened at Atlanta and also preview the Las Vegas Motor Speedway races coming up this weekend. Arian Foster Arian Foster's back in the news, making some claims, and I think they're ridiculous. We'll see if we agree or disagree with what he says. Also, we're going to talk about some best fits for Alshon Jeffrey and DeSean Jackson. So probably two of the bigger names in the wide receiving corps for free agency. Also, we'll talk about the best backcourt duos in the NBA right now, and then we'll wrap up the show with a Coastal Carolina basketball interview with the play-by-play analyst Lane Harris, who is out in New Orleans getting ready for the Shawnts to take on the Jaguars of South Alabama. We got Dennis back on the line. Sorry, Dennis, we cut you off there. What I was saying is that, you know, it was still a shot. I mean, it still threw him off balance.
He broke his jaw, but, you know, Ali could take a punch. But the fact that Frazier was stepping on his foot, if you stepped on somebody's foot and hit them, they're going down. But getting back to the international players, I want to give you a guy. Now, I was a huge, believe it or not, New Jersey Nets fan, basically because of Julius Erving.
Okay.
But Drazen Petrovic, okay? His life was cut short in a car accident in Germany in 1984. But for 4 years, he was one of the best shooters in the NBA. He used to battle Jordan. He was from Croatia. He was a fantastic European player, and he actually kind of opened the door for a lot of European players to come in. I don't know if, do you remember Drazen?
No, sir. I know his career. You're saying his career was cut short. Does that? I mean, he was at the time, I guess you can say, one of the better international players. But because his career was so short in the NBA and his life was so short, I don't know if you could put him up there with Hakeem Olajuwon and Dirk Nowitzki.
No, I'm not putting him up there. But if you look at Drazen's stats, I mean, you haven't even heard of him, but maybe some of your listeners have.
Okay.
Drazen died at 28, but he used to battle Jordan. They used to trash talk. He was a great Olympian. He was a silver medalist with Croatia. He used to battle, the dream team.
Mm-hmm.
Drazen was a great, great player for 4 years. He would have been if his life lasted longer, no doubt, one of the best of all time. You have to look him up, Drazen Petrovic.
I will. Thanks for the phone call, Dennis, and thanks for adding that name to some of the international players, best international players to ever play in the NBA. So we got a couple names in there, and I think there's Hakeem, the Dream, Olajuwon, Dirk Nowitzki, Steve Nash, Patrick Ewing, the gentleman that Dennis just mentioned as well. I'm not going to throw him in there because he only played 4 years, but got to be those four right now. If you have any other names to throw in there, keep calling us up, 843-652-3776. Let's go through the polls for you to participate on Twitter at 1003theteam. Scared me there, Rusty.
Sorry.
It's all right. Is Mavericks power forward Dirk Nowitzki the best international player to ever play in the NBA? And right now, again, still 100% say yes. Who wins the NASCAR race at Las Vegas Motor Speedway this weekend? What NFL team is the best fit for wide receiver Alshon Jeffrey? Is it the Vikings, the Titans, the Cardinals, or other? And if you vote for other, tell us who. What NFL team is the best fit for wide receiver DeSean Jackson? Is it the Buccaneers, the Eagles, the Patriots, or other? And if you vote for other, tell us who. And then which NBA team has the best backcourt duo? The Warriors, the Blazers, the Wizards, or other? And if you vote for other, tell us who again. Want to hear from you guys also. 843-652-3776. Phone line's going to be wide open outside of those two segments where we have great interviews. Again, Carrie Tharp, the president of Darlington Raceway, joining us to talk about NASCAR. And then we have Lane Harris, the play-by-play voice of the Chanticleers, joining us from New Orleans as the Chanticleers get ready to start off in the Sun Belt Conference Tournament. Those two interviews coming on today's show, one in the first hour, one in the second hour. We also have two family four-packs of tickets to give away for Chanticleers versus the Demon Deacons of Wake Forest today in baseball. That game is today at 4 p.m., so be aware. Write down that number, 843-652-3776, if you want a chance to win those tickets. When we come back from this first commercial break, teams that need to win free agency in the NFL. We'll talk about that on The Drive.
Welcome back to The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team.
Welcome back to The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team. 30 minutes past the hour, Pat Payone and Rusty hanging out with you on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team. And we have another phone call from Anthony. Anthony, what's going on, my man? You want to add a name to the international player as well?
Well, actually, I wanted to make two quick statements. I know someone already named Hakeem Olajuwon.
Yeah.
And the truth be told, any NBA historian would easily say by far he's the greatest international NBA player ever.
Okay.
Easily. By far at that. And I don't know if anybody's named Manu Ginobili.
Ooh, that's another good one. So I just got a tweet from somebody saying Tony Parker. Isn't he French? And that's another name to throw in there as well. I'll throw in Manu Ginobili.
Yes, and there's so many. It is. But the one guy that said about Petrovic, I think, is played only 4 years. That guy, if he would have played an NBA career, he probably would have been close to the Hall of Fame. He was that good.
Wow. Okay. I'll look this guy up. I've heard the name, but I didn't really know exactly what he was able to do in the NBA. Thank you for the phone call, Anthony, though. So I got some good names going down on this list now. I'm need to get another sticky note over here just to start writing down these names. But let's get into the NFL free agency teams with the most at stake. Starting off, I think the Arizona Cardinals are a team that really need to have a big free agency period because their time is dwindling. They have a starting quarterback at the end of the line of his career and maybe one of the better wide receivers we've seen in the NFL at the end of his career as well. And so there's an expiration date on this Arizona Cardinal team. I mean, this team needs to find its quarterback of the future, and there's some defensive roster moves. They lost linebacker Kevin Minter and safety Tony Jefferson. They could all leave via free agency after a productive season. So there's some holes on defense as well. And listening to Bruce Arians at the Combine, it sounds like he already knows that this offseason is going to be massive for them and that they're not going to stay quiet. I think they're a team, and we'll talk about this later, that could go out and get Alshon Jeffrey and really stack this wide receiving core with Alshon Jeffrey and Larry Fitzgerald. The New Orleans Saints are another team, maybe even one of the top teams that need to make a splash, multiple splashes in free agency. I mean, Sean Payton is loved in New Orleans for bringing a Super Bowl championship to that city. But he's on the verge, it's a very thin line, of not being liked very much for what has happened over the past couple seasons.
Right.
Three straight 7-9 seasons, and they just have not been able to fix this defense. And it's wasting the golden years of Drew Brees.
Yes.
This guy's like 30, maybe almost like 50 years old. I mean, I know I'm exaggerating there. But he's in his late 30s, early 40s. And he's still playing as one of the top 10, top 5 quarterbacks in the NFL. Now, we've already started talking about the anticipated trade of wide receiver Brandon Cooks. And then there's also some departures defensively. But you have to believe this is the year with a trade of Brandon Cooks that they're going to try and get some defensive assets, but also in free agency. They need to improve the speed and talent of this defense because right now it's lackluster at every level on that defense. They are just one of the worst defensive teams compared to their offense. It's such a weird dynamic for the New Orleans Saints because they have the ability to throw up 40 points on somebody. But in that same game, they have the ability to give up 45 points and lose the game.
That's right.
And that's something that needs to change in New Orleans. And if that continues the way it's going, we might be saying bye-bye to Sean Payton soon. I think the Washington Redskins are another team that need to make a big splash in free agency. We know about the Kirk Cousins trade. It still remains possible. You're now talking about their two starting wide receivers leaving in Pierre Garçon and DeSean Jackson. I mean, this has the feel of a team that's ready to spiral. I mean, now it's very interesting because they're not looking like a team that's coming off an organization's first back-to-back winning seasons since Norv Turner and Gus Frerotte. Who remembers Gus Frerotte? Jeez. But the Skins are desperately needing some good news to come their way, and I think free agency is one way that they could do that. Now, are they willing to go out there and spend anything? Who's calling the shots, by the way? Because the GM still hasn't shown up.
That's a good question.
Yeah. Another team, two more teams to add to this list. The Jacksonville Jaguars, now under Coach Doug Marrone. He's not beginning his tenure in Jacksonville with a honeymoon period. He's going in there, and he is the change candidate because he thinks this team needs to, this roster needs to be redone. And, you know, they have some talent on this roster, but it never equates to wins. They have yet to eclipse the 5-win plateau in a very long time. Now, Marrone and Dave Caldwell, the GM, both believe in Blake Bortles, and I think they're going to give him one more chance to be a winner with the Jacksonville Jaguars. You got to believe that they're going to be spending big in free agency, though. They need to address their secondary, which they did in the draft last year, but there's some pieces that need to be added as well. And you can't forget, they hired Vice President Tom Coughlin to be their vice president to hover over the operations of football. So Caldwell and Marrone need to go out and impress Dad.
Yes.
They need to impress Daddy.
Yes.
Because Tom Coughlin's not a guy who plays games. Not a guy who plays games at all. Finally, the last team that needs to make a big free agent period splash, I think, is the Green Bay Packers. We saw how close they were to making it to the Super Bowl. And all of those Packers fans, brokenhearted. This is a period where we're looking at this team, and there's going to be the players are going to be leaving this team. And they've done it in the past. They've made some playoff runs with some free agent signings, including Charles Woodson, Ryan Pickett, Julius Peppers, Jared Cook. They've all made big contributions when they were acquired in free agency. But they need to start wheeling and dealing again. This team is going to need a big free agency. With 9 free agents on the top 101 list, Ted Thompson's going to have to be disciplined and tested in this free agent period. He needs to replace over 4,000 snaps, and the majority were some of the better players on this problematic defense that they had last year. Almost like the New Orleans Saints. Maybe score 40 points, give up 45. But after painful defeats over the last 6 years in the NFC playoffs, maybe they need to take some new approach to this and do something big splashes in free agency to find some postseason love. So I'm going to say that. So going over these teams again, I think the Cardinals need to make some big moves in free agency. The Saints definitely need to make some moves. Depending on what happens in Washington, Washington needs to make some moves. The Jacksonville Jaguars, I think that is a team that just has too much talent that is not playing like they do. And then finally, the Green Bay Packers, who are just, they're just so close each and every year. And whether you wanted to equate it to injuries or just lack of defensive depth, it needs to happen this year. Mr. Williams, our resident Green Bay Packers fan, writes in on Twitter, Green Bay Packers need an aggressive defensive side, need a cornerback and an outside linebacker. You're right. You're right. They need a couple different pieces, not just two. But you're right, Mr. Williams. I think cornerback is a huge one, as they had so many injuries last year, and really they were just not able to plug in pieces to step up, and that's really what costed them against the Atlanta Falcons in the NFC Championship. All right, when we come back from this next commercial break, Carrie Tharp, the president of Darlington Raceway, is going to be joining us. But God let you know, a presenting sponsor of The Drive is HTC. HTC, this is life. Connect with it. And it doesn't matter if you're a power user accustomed to lightning-fast downloads or someone who just needs to check your email, HTC High-Speed Internet has a plan and pricing perfect for you. HTC High-Speed Internet has installation and 24/7 tech support, all for free with no hidden equipment fees. And if you want more details, you can call HTC High-Speed Internet at 843-369-8982. HTC, this is life. Connect with it.
It's Wednesday, and that means we're talking about NASCAR.
Yes, sir, it is Wednesday, and that means we are talking about NASCAR, and we are joined by Carrie Tharp, the president of Darlington Raceway. Get your tickets today for the Bojangles Southern 500 at darlingtonraceway.com. Carrie, how are you doing today?
Good morning. How's everything going over there?
Oh, just fine, just fine. Enjoying some beautiful weather, and hopefully it stays this way, although it's supposed to get cold this weekend. What is the latest going on right now at Darlington Raceway that the fans should be aware about?
Well, we have a spring fling, Darlington spring fling, on Saturday, December the 1st. Or excuse me, December the 1st. Wow. Saturday, April the 1st, which is 3 weeks from this Saturday coming up. And And what that is, we'll have a 5K run for those that want to get out at 8 a.m. And run. The run finishes on the racetrack, so that's pretty cool. Then we'll have an Easter egg hunt at around 10 for the kids, and then around 11:30 we'll have a community lunch on the grounds there at the racetrack. And all of this is free of charge. The only charge there is for the run itself. And so this is the really our first annual, what we're calling it, the Darlington Spring Fling. We're inviting the entire community from the PD and beyond to come over to the racetrack that morning and enjoy themselves, enjoy some fellowship, let the kids do an Easter egg hunt, and just kind of check out the racetrack. So we have that going on right now, and then we're also really just immersed ourselves into our ticket sales for our 2017 Throwback Weekend. So that's ongoing, and that occupies up most of our time.
I mean, who wouldn't want to get a chance to be able to run on the racetrack itself? That's a pretty cool thing. Plus, you have the kids having a great time doing the Easter egg hunt. All right, let's go back to last weekend at Atlanta. I watched this race, and it looked like it was going to be dominated the entire start to finish by Kevin Harvick. He did dominate the race, then has a speeding penalty on pit road with 14 laps to go. That leads to Brad Keselowski taking the win. What is the bigger storyline of this race, the domination and mistake by Harvick, or the great fortune and great start of the season for Keselowski, and tell me why?
Well, that's a great question. I think it's the Keselowski being at the right place at the right time, because he gets his win. He punches his ticket into the playoffs, and he can start accumulating points and more wins as the season progresses. Kevin Harvick's going to get a win. There's no doubt in my mind, provided he stays healthy. Now, he did have a dominant race car. There's no doubt about it, but I've seen that happen before. I've seen drivers lead, vast majority of the laps. I've seen them lose them on the last lap, cut a tire, something fails. They get into something and so forth. But I think Keselowski, being at the right place at the right time, and a lot of times in sports, you win a game or you win a race that you really shouldn't win. But then there's a lot of times too when you lose a game or you lose a race that you shouldn't lose. And so those things even out. But I think the biggest storyline was Keselowski, capitalizing on Harvick's misfortune.
I got to agree with you there. And speaking of a great start to the season for Keselowski, another great start to the season belongs to Casey Kane. He had a seventh-place finish at Daytona and a fourth-place finish at Atlanta, especially being a lap down early in the race. Now, can he keep this up this season, and should we start considering him in the top echelon of contenders for the championship?
Well, Casey Kane has been in the playoffs before. Casey Kane has won races. He's been a contender over the years, and really up until the last two or three years ago, his performance just kind of fell off. I don't think he's won a race since 2014 in Atlanta, but he is showing that he's capable. And those two finishes that he had were no flukes. He raced very, very hard at Daytona, and he raced very hard and very smart at Atlanta. So right now he's putting himself in great position from a point standpoint. He does need to get a win, in my opinion. I think he's likely to get a win someplace. He's a good race car driver. He's an excellent equipment over there at Hendrick Motorsports. He's got a good crew chief and Keith Roddard. And so, there's really all the things are set up for him to have success. And I agree. That's a great point you make. I think he's one of the early season success stories of a driver that really needed to perform this year. I think he's one guy that really, people were looking at and seeing how he was going to perform. And so far, so good.
Great point there. Yeah, and we've seen this Casey Kane been up there, as you mentioned, Kerry Tharp, the president of Darlington Raceway. He's been up there for the playoffs, just trying to get back to those winning ways, and he started off the season pretty well so far. I read an interesting article on ESPN.com about the prospect or idea of quieting down the cars of NASCAR. I'm not a fan of this thought. One of the big reasons you go to NASCAR is because you want to walk away deaf almost. I mean, it's just a great thing. It's maybe it's manly, it's macho. But I can understand why NASCAR is throwing this idea out there. What do you think about, lessening the sound that these machines put out?
Well, that's been something that they've been looking at for several years, Pat. I can recall there were some studies done at a race a few years ago over at Bristol Motor Speedway, which, in my opinion, I've been to every racetrack on the circuit, and that one is the loudest going because of the configuration of the track. Mm-hmm. You're in that bowl stadium, that coliseum, if you will, and the sound just stays right in that valley there. And so it's amazing, to be honest with you, though, that the significance of the sound that is created at these racetracks. And so I think what NASCAR is doing, they're doing their due diligence. I don't think that they want to make the cars silent. I don't think they're going to do that by any stretch of the imagination. What I think that they will do, and I think it's smart, I think that they'll temper it down ever so slightly that you might not even notice it when you go to a race. It could be just, say, tempered down by 10% or so that would, you know, help someone out. Wouldn't damage their hearing, and it would also allow fans to be able to at least strike up some type of conversation during the course of the event. It's very hard to do to even talk or hear yourself think at Bristol or Martinsville, for that matter. But I think that they'll make the smart decision. I know they know that it would be very detrimental to you know, eliminate the noise too greatly. Mm-hmm. I don't think the fans would like that at all. I think it just wouldn't work. But I think that there's a way for them to temper it ever so slightly where, you know, probably the common fan or the normal fan wouldn't even notice it. But I think that's probably the direction they're headed.
Again, joined by Kerry Tharp, the president of Darlington Raceway. And you can get your tickets today for the Bojangles Southern 500 on their website, darlingtonraceway.com. And all right, so let's look forward to this weekend, the 1.5 mile track at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Now, the driver with the most wins at this track is Jimmy Johnson. The driver with the best average finish since 1998, Dale Jr. Now, having heard that, and I know you and I both, you know, want to see Dale Jr. and Jimmy Johnson do great things this year, who is your favorite to win the Cobalt 400? And also, as I mention or ask you every week, who's a dark horse that could surprise some fans coming out on top at this Cobalt 400?
Well, that's a great point. And certainly those names that you mentioned are extremely strong. Dale Earnhardt Jr. has been very strong there. Jimmy Johnson has won multiple times there. But I tell you, Pat, I think the Ford cars are above and beyond what everybody else is right now. And so I'm going to have to go stick in the Ford camp. I'm going to go. I don't think Keselowski can repeat because I believe he won this race last year, if I'm not mistaken. But I think Joey Logano, it's time for Joey Logano to get to victory lane. So I like for him to win this week at Las Vegas. And as far as a dark horse, I tell you what, we talked about him earlier in this broadcast. I'm going to go with Casey Kane. I think Casey Kane is poised to get to victory lane. I think his mile and a half program is very, very strong. So I would pick him as a dark horse to win the race out there at Vegas. But I like Joey Logano as a favorite.
You heard it here, folks. Logano and Kane. From Kerry Tharp, the president of Darlington Raceway. Kerry, really appreciate the time. Enjoy watching the race this weekend. It should be a great one. There's always great races at Las Vegas. And we'll be back with you next week to talk about that and preview next week's race.
Okay, I appreciate it a lot. Y'all have a great week.
You too, Kerry. Really appreciate the time. Great interview with Kerry Tharp, the president of Darlington Raceway. And one more time, you can get your tickets right now for the Bojangles Southern 500 at darlingtonraceway.com. Do not wait, ladies and gentlemen. Go out there, get your tickets for this great race, the Bojangles Southern 500 at darlingtonraceway.com. Oh, I got, you know, if I'm taking one of my favorites, I'm taking one of the hometown boys, the Bush brothers. They're both from Las Vegas.
That's right.
I mean, I don't think Kirk's going to be up there because he's already won a race. You know, I want to get someone different. I'll take Kyle. Why not? Why not? Why not take Kyle? Who cares? NASCAR is just so fun to watch no matter what, whoever wins. Even though I am a Dale Jr. fan, I still want to see, you know, parity in the sport. And, you know, Logano could be a good pick as well. Casey Kane's a good pick. We'll see what happens. I'm going to be watching that race this Sunday at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. All right, when we come back, Arian Foster said something stupid. We'll talk about that. But first, let's go ahead and weigh and give away a four-pack of tickets. There we go. Get it out of your mouth, Patrick. To Coastal Carolina versus Wake Forest. That game is today at Springs Brook Stadium. That is 4 p.m. Wake Forest versus Coastal Carolina. You want four tickets? Give us a call at 843-652-3776. Again, 843-652-3776. Caller number two will give you four tickets to today's game. Again, 4 p.m., Coastal Carolina taking on Wake Forest. We'll be back on the drive.
Welcome back to The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team.
Welcome back to The Drive. Just about a minute and a half left in the first hour, and had to talk about this. Arian Foster. I don't know whether he's joking or whether he's really this dumb, but he says if he ever runs into a wolf, he likes his chances. He said in a one-on-one encounter with a wolf, he would come out victorious. Now, in his tweets, he says, I'm 230 pounds. Wolves are about, what, 100, 200 tops? He has no thumbs. If I control his neck, he's donezo. If he bites me, his main weapon is immobilized, then becomes invulnerable. This is why thumbs are so important. And then he says, I still have a whole other arm, my right one, because I use my dominant one as a shield. I'm just smarter than a wolf. Advantage me. Now, he did admit that if he were to fight a tiger, if they cross paths, he said, that's a tiger. I have no chance. Well, at least he knows he has no chance against a tiger. But against a wolf, first of all, wolves go in packs. So you'll never encounter a wolf one-on-one. Even if it was one-on-one, there's no way you can defeat a wolf, Arian Foster. You're retired. We've seen how bad your knees are. He's just going to shoot at your knee and you're going to go down. No, dumb. No, Arian Foster would get ravaged by a wolf. Just had to throw that out there, though. Really dumb.
Your sports leader from Little River to Loras, Conway to Carolina Forest. We are WSCA, Atlantic Beach, Myrtle Beach. Cumulus Broadcasting Sports Radio 100.3, The Team.
Hour two of The Drive is brought to you by Air Mechanical. Get a new high-efficient Amana system today. Air Mechanical, we're in your neighborhood.
Welcome back to The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team, with your boys, Pat Payone and Wally B.
No Wally B today. He'll be back on Friday, but it is Pat Payone and Rusty hanging out with you on The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team. And whether you're listening on your radio at 100.3 FM, streaming it live through our website, TeamMyrtleBeach.com, or listening through our free app, the Sports Radio 100.3 The Team app. We welcome you to today's show. This is Hour 2 of The Drive, and if you missed Hour 1, we'll give you a little recap of what we talked about. Talked about Dirk Nowitzki joining the 30,000-point club, the sixth member of that. And so that spurned the discussion of who is the best international player. For my money, I'm going to say it's either Dirk Nowitzki or the Dream, Hakeem Olajuwon. But there's been some good additions as well, including Steve Nash, Patrick Ewing, Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili. There's some good names there. There's some real good names there. But I'm giving it to one or two guys. It's going to be either the Dream or Dirk Nowitzki. Yes, sir. We also talked about the ACC first-round results with Clemson getting the win yesterday, Wake Forest getting the win, and Georgia Tech getting upset. Ryan writes in, agree with Dirk, but Yao Ming worth honorable mention for top five. Yao Ming had such an interesting career because he was supposed to be this big, you know, addition to the Houston Rockets. And in my opinion, it really never panned out. He never really peaked. Always was injured or having some type of injury issue. But yeah, I mean, you could throw him in the top 10, I would say. But I don't think he's up there with a Steve Nash or a Patrick Ewing or Dirk Nowitzki, Hakeem Olajuwon, or even a Tony Parker. That would be my top five right now. We also talked about some NFL teams that need to win free agency. We had our NASCAR Wednesday interview with Kerry Tharp, the president of Darlington Raceway. And we just, you know, had a little comedy session talking about Arian Foster, who thinks he could win a fight with a wolf. Not a chance. Get out of here. But we move from one retired NFL player to two other NFL players looking for new homes, and that is wide receivers Alshon Jeffrey and DeSean Jackson. Alshon Jeffrey, 27 years old. This is going to be his sixth year in the NFL, and the Chicago Bears declined to use the franchise tag on Alshon Jeffrey, putting him in the free agency pool, which actually starts tomorrow. So we may have some of these pieces falling. But he told ESPN's Josina Anderson that he's looking to sign with a Super Bowl contender. And there are some teams that have some needs at wide receiver that are some contenders for the Super Bowl. Maybe not for the Super Bowl, but playoff contenders. And I start off with Tampa Bay. Now, Tampa Bay has actually been linked to DeSean Jackson, and we'll get to that. That's probably a better fit for them than Alshon Jeffrey. But if you're looking to fill the need of Vincent Jackson's vacancy, putting Alshon Jeffrey opposite of Mike Evans gives you two very large, very athletic targets for Jameis Winston. And that could be a serious duo to contend with in the NFC South. Serious.
Yes.
Especially with some bad defensive backfields like the Atlanta Falcons, the New Orleans Saints, and the Carolina Panthers. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers could just run ravage in the NFC South. Not necessarily win it, but they could put up some serious numbers. I also think the Tennessee Titans are an interesting prospect. Now, the Tennessee Titans are the ones linked with Brandon Cooks in the trade for him, but maybe they're not true contenders. They're contenders in the AFC South if they add either Alshon Jeffrey or Brandon Cooks. And adding Alshon Jeffrey not only gives them the number one wide receiver that Marcus Mariota really needs, but it allows them to use their draft picks to bolster their defense, which is also some key needs. I mean, they have some big needs in the defensive backfield. And so adding Alshon Jeffrey or Brandon Cooks, or a number one wide receiver in general, is going to allow them to use their draft picks to really improve their defense. Think about this, though. What if the Dallas Cowboys go out and add Alshon Jeffrey along with Dez Bryant? Wow. Wow. I mean, he thrived as the number two option in Chicago when Brandon Marshall was there. Could he not thrive in Dallas as the number two option behind Dez Bryant? I mean, this would be a great move for the Dallas Cowboys. Now, does this seem plausible? No. For fantasy football fans, you are starting to write down Alshon Jeffrey's name just for the first 6 weeks, because more than likely this guy will get injured. That's just his MO. But if I'm the Dallas Cowboys and right now I'm looking at adding either Alshon Jeffrey or Adrian Peterson to this roster, I'll take Alshon Jeffrey over Adrian Peterson any day.
Oh, yeah.
You don't need another running back. You could really get another star wide receiver, and it would be incredible. Another team that I think he could thrive on is the Minnesota Vikings. The Minnesota Vikings are in need of a big possession wide receiver, and also one that could be a viable piece in the red zone. It would be very interesting to see what Alshon Jeffrey would look like on this Minnesota Vikings team. Not just for the two revenge games he would have going up against the Chicago Bears, but also, it takes this Minnesota offense to another level. Because right now, Stephon Diggs is your number one wide receiver, and as well as he is a special talent and a good athlete, he's not a number one wide receiver in my book. Alshon Jeffrey has the potential, and he has shown that he has the ability to be a number one wide receiver if he can stay healthy. So I think the Minnesota Vikings, and they do have some cap space, I think they have the ability to go out there and sign him, and maybe we see another 6-0 start for this defense, because their offense is terrible. But now you add Alshon Jeffrey, that adds a little bit of wrinkle to the offense and adds some piece for Sam Bradford to actually throw the ball to. Not that he can really throw the ball either. But I think those are the teams that really, and not to mention, what about the Arizona Cardinals? I think the Arizona Cardinals are another team that if they decide, hey, this is the last year we make a run for the Super Bowl, let's just, you know, go balls to the walls right now, gentlemen. Let's add Alshon Jeffrey to Larry Fitzgerald and David Johnson. That's a top five offense. That is a top five offense. Now, whether Carson Palmer stays injury free all season long, that's the big question. Because right now there is no backup quarterback in Arizona, and maybe they'll be going to the draft to help them out with that. But I really like, if I'm ranking this in terms of teams that I would want to see Deshaun or Alshon Jeffrey on, I think the Cardinals would be number one for me. I think the Titans would be number two if they don't make the trade for Brandon Cooks. And I think the Vikings would be number three. Right now on the poll, 69% say other. But nobody's telling me who. Come on, folks. I wrote down, if you vote for other, go ahead and say who the team you're thinking about. I can't read your mind. Go on Twitter, at 100 through the team. Continue to respond to our polls. But if I'm doing it for the Arizona Cardinals, I go out there and get Alshon Jeffrey because that adds a huge piece, especially if Larry Fitzgerald is to move on and retire along with Carson Palmer. You still have a number one wide receiver to go along with John Brown and Alshon Jeffrey. So I'm saying Arizona is the number one place. If I'm Alshon Jeffrey, I'm signing with Arizona today, tomorrow, because it starts tomorrow, actually. But another wide receiver looking for a new home is DeSean Jackson. Now, he is 30 years old, and he has had five seasons of over 1,000 yards receiving. He's also had some big production years of two years with nine touchdowns. But the number that jumps off the page is his career average per catch. And that is 17.7 yards per catch.
That's
this
unreal.
This is a big play wide receiver. And yes, the knock on him is that he's slender but fast. He can only run, you know, a couple of routes. Well, in this NFL, you don't really need, as a veteran piece, you don't really need to run every route perfect. He can run every route, not perfect. But let's talk about the teams that could really add him and shake it up. The Tennessee Titans back on this list. They need a number one wide receiver. Do I need to say that any more clearly? They need a number one wide receiver. Whether it's Brandon Cooks, whether it's DeSean Jackson, whether it's Alshon Jeffrey, they need a number one wide receiver. And that not only allows Marcus Mariota to get the ball out of his hands to a guy who can make plays, but that allows them to, again, address their defensive needs. So I'm going to, you know, take the Tennessee Titans off here because that's just like three wide receivers I've mentioned in the past 2 days that they need to go out and get. Maybe they get all three of them. How about that? No, that's not happening. but let's talk about the other teams that are a possible fit for DeSean Jackson. And starting with the most recent rumor, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are just going to throw money at DeSean Jackson. Vincent Jackson is not planning to retire, but he is 34 years old, and he hasn't been much of a factor in Tampa Bay. He could be a number three wide receiver if the Buccaneers choose to keep him. Enter DeSean Jackson. You add DeSean Jackson to Mike Evans, who is a big man, just a monster on the football field. You add the speed that could occupy some of these defensive backs of DeSean Jackson. That's a pretty devastating duo. I would actually, if I'm the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I'm going after DeSean Jackson before I go after Alshon Jeffrey. The Bucs, in so many ways, need to take some attention away from Mike Evans. And yes, you know, tight end Cameron Brate, he started to cement himself, I guess you can say, as a reliable threat. But he doesn't have the downfield speed. And there's no other wide receiver on this team that is good enough. But when healthy, DeSean Jackson still has the afterburners that force secondaries to play on their heels. And so if I'm the Buccaneers, that's the move I make. But there's some other teams that are out there. Now, I'm not going to call my L.A. Rams a contender because they're not. But everything tells me this is a good fit. You send him to his hometown of L.A. where he's with his former offensive coordinator, Sean McVay, and the young quarterback that desperately needs help. That makes a lot of sense. Do I think the LA Rams make this move? No, not a chance. That leaves me with two teams that I think are the two most viable teams that DeSean Jackson signs with. And one being the team we all love to hate, the New England Patriots. DeSean Jackson has played the majority of his career on mediocre to bad teams. He's been labeled difficult to manage, but he has a skill set that is explosive and electric at times. You put him on the Patriots with Belichick, with Brady, and the other wide receivers that they have, not only could they manage his eccentric personality, but you're giving Tom Brady a legitimate deep threat option opposite of Julian Edelman and a presumably healthy Rob Gronkowski. This gives me flashbacks to that record-breaking season when they had Randy Moss.
Yes.
That's a scary proposition. We're looking at a repeat champion if they go ahead and add DeSean Jackson in free agency. Now, the MO of the Patriots, they don't make big free agency moves, especially guys who are cancers to the locker room, and that is something that DeSean Jackson has really been labeled throughout his career. But, man, what a wide receiving core you would have.
They'd be unstoppable down the field.
They would be.
I mean, no question.
The talk is also that Adrian Peterson is willing to take less money to go play there. You add Adrian Peterson, give them the Super Bowl title right now. I don't care what their defense looks like. I really don't.
You're right.
I don't care what their offensive line looks like. They could put out middle schoolers out there, and they're probably going to still win games.
Yes, they would.
Because you have Tom Brady, you got Bill Belichick, you got Adrian Peterson, you got DeSean Jackson, you got Julian Edelman, and oh yeah, coming back from Rob Gronkowski.
That's right.
Wow. Is it going to happen? Not likely. But I want to see that happen. He's going to have to take some less money to go to New England compared to what the Buccaneers are willing to give him, which is a ridiculous contract. How about a reunion, though? That's the last team I'm going to talk about. The Philadelphia Eagles have been linked to DeSean Jackson, and they obviously have a need at wide receiver. And, you know, despite the ugliness of their split in 2014, you know, DeSean Jackson and this team, the Philadelphia Eagles, have been mostly positive on the field recently in their history. There hasn't been any spats or issues that we know about or that I know about. And Jackson has led the league, as I mentioned earlier, in yards per catch. Well, he led it last year with 17.9 yards per catch. That's the second time in 3 years he's held that title. Third time overall in his career. Could Carson Wentz use a big play weapon to help stretch the field? Yes. Could he use a guy that can catch the ball? Yes. Could he use a veteran presence on this wide receiving core that knows how to run certain routes? Yes. Because right now, there's not many options for Carson Wentz. And yeah, he had a good start to his career the first couple games of the Philadelphia Eagles season last year. But let's be real. They were playing some cupcake doo-doo teams to start off that season last year. We saw what the real Philadelphia Eagles looked like towards the end of the season when they actually started going up against some talented rosters. If it's my money and I'm a general manager of one of these teams going out there, sign me up for the New England Patriots. You're instant Super Bowl champion, something you cannot never say again in your career if you're DeSean Jackson, because you haven't even been sniffing the Super Bowl. It just makes so much sense. It almost makes too much sense, Rusty. That means it's not going to happen.
Unfortunately, that's how it goes.
That's exactly how it goes. But even last year, and he's 30 years old. Last year, as I mentioned, led the league in yards per catch average with 17.9. He broke the 1,000-yard plateau with 1,005 yards, 56 receptions from Kirk Cousins, 4 touchdowns. That's the biggest detriment to him, is that he didn't have a lot of touchdowns. And he's not going to get a lot of touchdowns probably if he does go to New England, because you have some big targets in Chris Hogan, who's taller than DeSean Jackson, and Rob Gronkowski, who's towers over DeSean Jackson, towers over pretty much every wide receiver, and Malcolm Mitchell, who has turned into a pretty good deep threat himself and a good wide receiver in the red zone. But I love that move. If I'm the New England Patriots and I'm DeSean Jackson, I think this is a great move for both the team and the player. Going to the poll real quick. What NFL team is the best fit for DeSean Jackson? 43% say the Buccaneers. 29% say other. 14% say the Eagles. 14% say the Patriots. Wow. I got to say the Patriots. I really got to say that. As much as I don't like the Patriots, I respect what they do. They are the best franchise that I've seen in NFL history in my lifetime. I have a hate for them because they beat my Rams in a Super Bowl by a field goal. Damn Adam Vinatieri. But no, it just makes a lot of sense.
Well, and think about it this way. He's 30 years old. What better place to spend the twilight of your career?
Yeah.
I mean,
so win the Super Bowl your first year with the Patriots.
That's
you
it.
Can retire.
That's it. You can be done.
Yeah. I mean, they're not going to give him the money that he wants. That's the biggest thing. That's the biggest thing. Going to Twitter real quick. Mark writes in, Hakeem the Dream. Dikembe Mutombo is a new name to this list. Let me write that one down. Mr. Finger. No. Tim Duncan from the Bahamas. Yes, I threw that one in there as well. There's some good names on this list of the best international NBA players ever. But I still think Hakeem and Dirk top that list for me. It's hard for me to say now with throwing Dikembe Mutombo in there whether Steve Nash is three or whether Dikembe Mutombo is three. Tim Duncan's from the Bahamas. What am I thinking? Tim Duncan's up there now. That's in the top three. Tim Duncan for sure.
I don't think he's better, but what about Pau Gasol?
Personally, no.
No, I don't think he's good.
He has lived off the coattails of some of the players he's played with, especially with the Lakers. That's how he won his rings with Kobe Bryant.
Right.
Yeah, Pau Gasol's a good piece.
Yes.
He's not a good player. He's not a great player.
He's not vital.
Yes, correct. You can't build a roster around Pau Gasol.
I'm just surprised even nobody hasn't thrown the name out yet.
No, you're right. Marc Gasol's another good one, but yeah, it's another piece. Ooh, Tim Duncan's up there now. Does Tim Duncan pop out Steve Nash? No, not for you?
Not for me.
Oh, the big fundamental is definitely he's one of my favorite players in NBA history. I'm going to put him in my top three with Dirk and Hakeem. But Rusty, being stingy with his top three, he's saying no. All right.
Waggle my finger.
Yeah, that's the Dikembe.
That's
Tim
right.
Tim Duncan never waggled anything other than his NBA finals rings that he won with the Spurs. And yeah, he never said anything on the court either. Pretty interesting. Let's go ahead and give away another family four-pack of tickets. Coastal Carolina versus Wake Forest again today. 843-652-3776. Again, 843-652-3776. You want four tickets to today's game. Coastal Carolina taking on the ACC foe, Wake Forest Demon Deacons. That, again, is at 4 p.m. You want tickets? Be calling number 2 to 843-652-3776. We'll be back on the drive.
Baby, let me. I did it again, so I'm gonna let go. Oh my, baby, let me love you down.
Welcome back to The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team.
Welcome back to The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team. Right now on SportsCenter on our TV in the studio, they were just showing the many looks of Dirk Nowitzki throughout his career, and he has had some crazy hairstyles, including one that made him look like he was from the Backstreet Boys. Like the butt cut with the
yes.
frosted tips or whatever you wanted to call it. Yeah, not a good look. But we've been talking all morning about some of the great international players. Oh, by the way, I almost forgot. We had a caller number 2 who got the tickets. They hung up before we got their name. So still call right now, 843-652-3776. We'll take the next caller, and the next caller will get 4 tickets to today's Coastal Carolina versus Wake Forest game. Again, 4 p.m. today. So go ahead, call in. Rusty will answer the phone. We will give you these family four-pack of tickets to today's game. Again, we had a number 2 caller. They hung up before we got their name. So if you're that person, call back. If you're not and you beat them to it, tough schnoogies. Is that even right? I don't know. Whatever. we've been talking about international players and the Dirk Nowitzki, how he, in my opinion, he's in the top 3 best international player of all time. And I just updated mine with Hakeem the Dream, Dirk Nowitzki, and also Tim Duncan. Steve Nash is just falling out because of Tim Duncan. But not only has it been a great time for international players, it's been a great time for guards. And I don't think we really realize how good we have it right now in terms of guard play in the NBA. The league average game score for starting backcourts this season is 22.9 points. That's the highest it's been in any points or in any point in the last 20 years. In the past 20 seasons, there have never been more than three backcourts in a single season that have collectively posted an average game score of 30 or more. There are seven of them. Seven of them this season. And to kind of give you an idea of where these backcourts are ranking right now in terms of point values, you know, the guard play has become more important than ever. It's becoming a shooting league. It has become that way. And with the Warriors of last year with Klay Thompson and Steph Curry and other guys who have started, that's the gold standard. They actually had a game score of 38.3 points. Right now, in terms of the last 20 years, we have 1, 2, 3, 6 of the top 8 are from this season, including the 2016 Raptors, Wizards, Blazers, Thunder, Rockets, and oh yes, the Warriors are up there as well. That's incredible. It's incredible that right now 6 of the top 8 in the last 20-year backcourts are right now playing this year in the NBA. So who is the number one duo? I mean, last year, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson laid waste to the basketball landscape and claimed the belt of the best backcourt in the NBA. But have they been challenged? Yeah, I think they have been. You know, if we were to take the best or the average game score of every start by point guards and shooting guards this season, Golden State no longer holds this top spot in starting backcourts. In fact, they're at number five in this metric. Curry's point total has gone from 30.1 points to 24.9 points, where his shooting percentage has dropped for him dramatically. Last year, he was shooting 66.9%. This year, 61.8%. I know that's such, but for him, that's a lot. 5 percentage points. Klay Thompson, pretty similar to last year, but he's shooting just a little bit under his average from three-point shooting. He was shooting 42.5% from three-point land. Now, a dismal 40.5. He's gone down 2 points. So these guys are terrible this year. No, come on. But right now, if you're ranking the best backcourt duos in the NBA, and I do it based on stats, you can do it based on what you've actually seen. Based on stats, right now, the Toronto Raptors, even without DeMar DeRozan, have the best backcourt game score with 35.8 points. And again, that is second in terms of the last 20 years. We got a winner, right? We didn't get okay. Keep calling 843-652-3776. After the segment, we're not going to take phone calls because we got Lane Harris, the play-by-play analyst for the Shawna Clears, coming on to talk about Coastal basketball. So you won't have a chance after that. But anyway, the Toronto Raptors with Kyle Lowry, who's made 56 starts, DeMar DeRozan, 55 starts, Norman Powell, 8 starts, and Corey Joseph, 7 starts. Those guys are leading right now in terms of the best basketball stats, backcourt basketball stats. Number two is the Washington Wizards with that great backcourt duo of Bradley Beal and John Wall. Beal is averaging 28 points per game. Wall leads the NBA with 12.3 assist points per game with nearly 21 points per game of his own. If I'm watching, that's my favorite duo. That I mean, outside of the duo of Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, that's the duo I'm watching in Washington. Number three is the Portland Trailblazers with Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. They've played pretty damn good this year. They're averaging together 52 points per game. The Oklahoma City Thunder backcourt duo of Russell Westbrook and whoever they decide to add in there is in fourth. Then we got Golden State. So it's pretty interesting. If I'm starting a backcourt, if I'm starting a franchise with a backcourt that is currently assembled, if I have the ability, you could take a point guard and shooting guard from the same team, and that's how you start your roster. I'm going with the Washington Wizards.
I am too.
Bradley Beal and John Wall are special talents, and they're young. For my money, that's the best backcourt duo. But, number two would have to be the Golden State Warriors of Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. On any given night, these two guys can both shoot for 30 points, even maybe more. And Steph Curry, he is a good assist point guard as well. Not great, good. But right now, the Toronto Raptors are leading the statistic with 35.8 game score. This is the best combined average game score of the backcourts. I don't think, my third best would probably be Toronto, even though DeMar DeRozan's injured. I think I would overlook them. And I would take Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum as my third best. I really think so. And if Russell Westbrook actually got some help in the backcourt, because right now it's Victor Oladipo, no thank you very much. Dude who's just an athlete who really is, in my opinion, not that great at basketball. I'll take Russell Westbrook with somebody else. But right now,
most definitely,
I can't take Russell Westbrook and Victor Oladipo in my top three. Going to the poll real quick, which NBA team has the best backcourt duo? You guys aren't very creative here. 100% say the Warriors. In a two-on-two contest, yes, this is probably the best backcourt duo. Maybe the Toronto Raptors give a run for their money. But in terms of starting a franchise, I really think I'm going to go with Washington. Bradley Beal is playing great. John Wall is probably the best assisting point guard in the NBA. Well, stats-wise, he is. And they've also, since the All-Star break, they're playing lights out. If we just took it from the All-Star break, they would be the best point guard in terms of that stat I gave you earlier, the best combined average game score. But it's not. It's the entire season. Bradley Beal is a special talent. John Wall, we know what he can do. He is an incredible point guard. It would be a tough matchup for me to start a roster with either... Wow. Now I'm reconsidering myself because of Klay Thompson's defensive ability. But then you also have to take in the lack of defense that Steph Curry plays.
Correct.
Maybe that evens it out. I'll still take Washington, number one. All right. You guys are saying the Warriors 100%. Hey, whatever. Yeah, that's fine. I'll take the three-pointers all day long as well. It's just you live and die by the three. There's some dying that goes along with that. When we come back from this next commercial break, we are going to have Lane Harris, the play-by-play voice of the Chanticleers men's basketball team. They are down in New Orleans, and they get their Sun Belt Conference Tournament, their inaugural Sun Belt Conference Tournament slate started today, going up against the Jaguars of South Alabama. We'll be joined by Lane Harris on The Drive coming up after this.
To The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team.
Welcome back to The Drive. 40 and a half minutes past the hour. Pat Payon and Rusty hanging out with you on this Wednesday, March 8th. And it's Wednesday, and that means the Chanticleers are getting underway in their Sun Belt Conference Tournament today. And we are now joined by Lane Harris, the play-by-play voice for Coastal Carolina men's basketball. First, Lane, how you doing this morning? And is this your first time in the city of New Orleans?
No, it's my third time.
It's your third time.
Yeah, we were here for Joe Cash and I were here for Big South Sunbelt, Media Days in July. And I was actually a senior in college when I came through New Orleans on my way back from Houston. Tar Heels played the Texas Longhorns in the Bluebonnet Bowl, beat them. We came back through New Orleans in 1980. And the night that Herschel Walker and the Georgia Bulldogs beat Notre Dame in the national championship. So that was my first experience. So that was a long time ago. The city has changed a lot since then.
What have you experienced so far with the Chanticleers that, would make myself – I've never been in New Orleans. What should I come down there and really experience in New Orleans?
Well, Bourbon Street, obviously. haven't had the chance to do that one yet this week.
Okay.
Hopefully we'll get a chance to stay a few extra days and might get a chance to wander down there. Because that's kind of what you do on Bourbon Street. You wander and you come back home. maybe catch a little hot jazz. There's some good jazz clubs down there.
Okay.
But And the team went out to Milotti's last night. That's a very good Cajun style restaurant here, which is literally a walk away from our hotel.
Nice.
Here at the Courtyard by Marriott. So we all went and had dinner there last night. And that's always a good catch. And it's literally only about 200 yards from the river, Mississippi
Nice.
River. So you can catch some scenes over there as well.
All right, Lane, let's get down to business. The Chanticleers, they finish up the regular season 15-16 and 10-8 inside the Sun Belt Conference. Good enough for an eighth seed in this conference tournament. You've been with the team throughout the season. Talk to me about the biggest strength of this team and maybe a weakness that they could work on that if they do work on it, they'll be able to move far into this conference tournament.
Well, that's pretty clear cut with this year's edition of the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers. The team's strength is rebounding. They're one of the top rebounding teams in the Sun Belt Conference, averaging over 40 boards per game. They have a plus three rebounding margin over their opponents, which is another one of the top records, top standings in the league. So they're doing a good job. DeMario Beck, the junior college transfer, 6'8" junior from Cochran, Georgia, leads the team with 8.1 rebounds a game. Colton Ray St. Cyr, the senior from Williamsburg, at 6. You've got about 4 or 5 guys that have averaged about 3 rebounds a game. Arthur Levinowitz, Jalen Shaw, Siobhan Wiggins, Elijah Wilson, all those guys are getting at 3 boards a game. So we've been very consistent on the boards and pretty much year-long. And when we've not been consistent, as we were last Saturday at Appalachian State, we got out-rebounded 50-35, which is the biggest deficit anybody's out-rebounded us all season long. When we don't rebound good, we typically come out on the low end of the score. Your second part of the question, weakness, got to be free throw shooting.
Yeah.
I mean, we missed a bunch of free throws at Appalachian State. That was literally the difference in this game. This team's shooting hitting less than 2 out of every 3 of their free throws. And that's just, you can't do that and win big games, especially win big games down the clutch in the clutch times late in the game when teams are fouling you, trying to get back in games. If you're trying to stay with somebody, you've got to be able to hit those free throws. And I think it was especially crucial last Saturday. I think they missed the front end of 3 1-and-1s late in the game that you could get 2 points, you get nothing, and you lose a lot of momentum, and it really, really affects you psychologically too.
Definitely. And you mentioned Jalen Shaw. He was named to the All-Sun Belt Conference team. He's been averaging just above 14 points a game this year for the Chanticleers. What makes him such an effective player, and does he have the ability to really take this team on his back through this tournament?
The last part, yes, he does. I mean, he also leads the team in assists. He also leads the team in field goal percentage, free throw percentage, and steals. So he's been all everything. The USC transfer to Kitson Hartsville, South Carolina. He's a junior. He'll be coming back next year. So he'll definitely be the leader of this team next year. But I think he does. I mean, I think you've got him. You've got some good senior leaders on this team. Siobhan Wiggins, Elijah Wilson, Colton Ray St. Cyr, and even Michelle Ananga, who's starting to get back in the playing rotation, show some time there. You've got 4 solid seniors on this team that show strong leadership with Jalen. I think even though he's just a junior, I think he's a 2-guard. Siobhan runs the point, and Elijah plays the 3. I think all 3 of those guys, a good strong 3-guard lineup for the Chanticleers, has the quality and the ability to be able to lead them to success in this tournament.
Joined by Lane Harris, the play-by-play voice for Coastal Carolina men's basketball. And today, the Chanticleers take on the Jaguars of South Alabama. And going back to late February, these two teams met up with Coastal coming out on top in overtime with an 81-77 win. What about that game needs to happen similarly for Coastal Carolina to win this game? And what can they really improve upon in that actual game against South Alabama?
Well, very similar to the App State game in Boone on Saturday. This was a game of 2 halves. The Chanticleers were down 14 at the half.
Wow.
And came back and tied that game. They were down. They were getting out rebounded. I want to say 6 or 7 in the first half, but they out rebounded South Alabama 30-15 in the second half and held a 51-40 rebound average, which when you hold that type of rebounding average, you're getting a lot of offensive rebounds. And when you get the offensive rebounds, you get multiple possessions, more opportunities to score. And that allows you to catch somebody in the second half. If they just had solid shooting. I called that game, back on February 20th, and Siobhan Wiggins and Jalen Shaw didn't even score in the first half.
Wow.
Jalen Shaw ended up with 10 points. Javon Wiggins ended up fouling out late in the game, and he had maybe probably 5 or 6 points. But we had huge games from Colton Ray and DeMario Beck. Both had double-doubles, 18 and 14 for DeMario Beck, 15 and 16 for Colton Ray St. Cyr. Elijah had 21 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, and 2 steals when we beat USA back in Mobile on the 20th. So that's the type of effort you've got to have. You've got to out-rebound teams. You've got to get some good scoring and good performance from your senior leaders.
Again, the Chanticleers taking on University of South Alabama today. It's going to be on our airwaves, Sports Radio 100.3, the team, and you can listen to Lane Harris give the play-by-play call of that. 12:15 pregame, 12:30 first tip. I don't know the access that you've been able to have to the players and the coaches. I know they've been pretty busy probably with practices. But what do you think and what has been the message from Coach Cliff Ellis to the players, not only about this game but about the importance of this tournament?
Well, you know, Coach is a seasoned veteran, 42 years at the helm of leading college teams. So it's kind of like the old line from one of those funky race movies back in the 70s. The guy rips off his rearview mirror and says, "What's behind me is not important. Look ahead." All you got to do right now is you got to win 4 games. You know, you got to win 4 games in 5 days. You win today, you get an opportunity to take on the number one team in the league, who you've already beaten already on your home court, University of Texas at Arlington. You take everything literally 1 game at a time. You survive in advance. We're in March Madness right now, and I think that's the message he's given to these guys.
Again, Lane Harris, the play-by-play voice for Coastal Carolina men's basketball. You can hear the broadcast today on Sports Radio 100.3, the team, 12:15 pregame, 12:30 first tip. Lane, really appreciate the time. Enjoy your time. Hopefully it's a long time down in New Orleans with the Chanticleers.
I packed accordingly.
Well, appreciate the time, and enjoy your day.
My pleasure.
Great interview with Lane Harris, the play-by-play voice of Coastal Carolina men's basketball, and it should be a very interesting game. As Lane mentioned, down 14 in the first half, able to come back and get an overtime win over this South Alabama team, 81-77, back in late February, and that was in Alabama.
Yes, it was.
That was on the Jaguars' home court. This is now in New Orleans, a court neither team has claim on. You got to believe that the Chanticleers are going to be jazzed up for this game, and Lane said it well. You know, when the Chanticleers rebound extremely well, because they are the best rebounding team in the Sun Belt, they win these games. When they have a lackluster rebounding performance, things don't go their way, especially when they're not shooting their free throws well. And that's something that needs to definitely happen today for the Chanticleers to get the win. Well, again, one more time, I'll tell you again. Sports Radio 100.3, the team, 12:15 pregame, 12:30 first tip for Coastal Carolina taking on the Jaguars of South Alabama from the city of New Orleans. Again, Lane Harris, the play-by-play voice for Coastal Carolina men's basketball. When we come back, final word, what to watch. It's all coming up on The Drive.
It's time for the final word. The show is almost over, but the conversation continues throughout the day on Twitter at 1003 The Team. Enjoy your workday. We're wrapping up ours.
Welcome back to The Drive. Just about 2.5 minutes and 2 different final words for you. First, going over the Coastal Carolina schedule for you today. We will have both games on our airwaves. Again, the college basketball game, Coastal Carolina taking on South Alabama, will be at 12:15 pregame, 12:30 first tip on Sports Radio 100.3 The Team. And then the baseball game against Wake Forest is today at 4 p.m., and that'll be a 3:45 pregame, 4 o'clock first pitch, also on Sports Radio 100.3 The Team. But my other final word is congratulations. The four more teams, as you heard from Rusty's sports update, 4 more teams punched their tickets to the NCAA tournament, and the first being Gonzaga, who finished the season 32-1, 17-1 inside the West Coast Conference. They are likely a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. Mount St. Mary's also got in with a 71-61 win in the Northeast Conference Tournament Championship against St. Francis. They are 19-15 on the season. 14th seed is likely for them. Northern Kentucky, the Norsemen. We were having a little fun during the commercial break. Couldn't believe they were called the Norsemen. 24-10 on the season. Likely be a 16th seed. And this is their first ever appearance in the NCAA tournament. Finally, South Dakota State won the Summit Conference with an 18-16 record. They will likely be a 15th seed. We will continue to update those each and every day. What's going on today on TV? ACC tournament gets back underway in the second round. Miami versus Syracuse, noon on ESPN. Following that will be Clemson versus Duke, which I believe is going to be the best college basketball game of the day. 2 p.m. ESPN. That game back when they played in the regular season was pretty darn good. Big Ten tournament gets underway as well. Penn State versus Nebraska, 4:30 p.m. ESPN2. You have the ACC tournament continues at 7 p.m. on ESPN2, Wake Forest versus Virginia Tech. The Big 12 tournament gets underway as well. Oklahoma versus TCU, 7 p.m. ESPNU. Big East, Georgetown, St. John's, 7 p.m. Fox Sports 1. In the NBA, you got Pistons at Pacers, 8 p.m. ESPN. ACC, Pittsburgh versus Virginia, 9 p.m. ESPN2. And Big 12, Texas versus Texas Tech, 9 p.m. ESPNU. And then finally, the nightcap for the NBA, Celtics at Warriors, 10:30. Have a great day, everybody. The Drive.
The home of Coastal Carolina and the Carolina Panthers. This is WSCA Atlantic Beach, Myrtle Beach. Cumulus Broadcasting. Sports Radio 100.3. The Team.